Takashi! My God! Hey! Mr. Shinzo! Cool!
Das geht auf jeden Fall. Ich kann auf jeden Fall, es gibt neue Spannungen, neue Probleme, was ich mir Where are these needed? Over there?
I guess. I'm fine.
Tyron, can I get you some?
I've been to the...
I'm going to take half a peek and the other piece.
I figured they wouldn't be on me if they're not just 30 people.
What?
I figured they wouldn't be on me
if they're 30 people. Who was that? One of the tech guys or what?
Was it the one guy that was 20 for the next day?
Don't take shit. Just tell him to get fucking lost. You'll get the gist.
Yes.
Give me a sweet cheap English book.
Yeah, I was. They locked me out because I left, and I came, got back in. The guy from the UAV services. told me that I was not to leave the room because it's expensive equipment, and I was only here for how many days? Doing what? Streaming. Is it working? Yeah, it's good. Sounds good. When they got here, nobody was in the room. And I was setting up for half an hour.
You could have stacked it all.
Just a second. I figured that tonight's going to be pretty easy. There's the radio.
It's going to be a full shape
and
everything.
Well, Peter is preparing for the next talk, where he is going to show that FireWire audio on Linux works now. Yes, I'm not sure whether this was mentioned already to this crowd of people. For the VPN network clients, some of you were given CDs to install the client. After you have done this, bring these CDs back to the info desk so that someone else can use them. Or give them to your neighbor who is definitely looking for this. Because we only have a few and, yeah, everyone wants at least to give a try to get on the radar. Okay.
Welcome, everybody. Is it sure?
And come over to the tutorials. And then.
Which one?
You try. The biggest one.
The biggest one?
Yeah.
Am I understandable? Yeah. Also for the virtual people back there? Yeah, even further away than you guys? Oh, they're talking, so I just.
They're not interested.
Streaming team is not interested. Okay. Great. This one opens up. I've been doing the slides specially prepared for the internet talk. So white on black. I hope it's not a problem for readability for the users being physically here. And I also have to mention that all my slide making was rather last minute due to the fact that I also have a daytime job, which is neglected for this project already enough. So what is this all about? This demo I'm going to try so to give a small user point of view of the FireWire audio on Linux support right now. And I am Peter Palmers, so by this explanation, the first slide is already covered. And at this point, this FireWire audio on Linux is called FreeBob. Originates from the fact that it's a free driver for the Bebop devices of Bridgeco. But everything changes. Oh. Timing, that was not, that should have been hidden. Okay, what am I going to talk about first? FireWire, very small introduction. FireWire on Linux, FireWire Audio on Linux, with our 2 FreeBob version. Then some features, demos, and wish lists, but this is messed up because I didn't have time to meet. Oh, we'll see what happens. What is FireWire? It's a high-performance peer-to-peer serial bus, auto-configuration, all these nifty features that make life for users easier and for developers a lot harder. Because everything can change and you are supposed to support people unplugging devices while wanting no dropouts on other devices and things like that. I can tell you in advance, we're not yet there. That's probably one of the last things we're going to support, because it's, I think that the users actually doing this kind of hot plugging while doing critical recordings are rather low, non-numerous and stupid indeed, as suggested here. So let's just focus on basic stuff first. FireWire is standardized as IEEE 1394. And it's also called iLink by Sony, so it's all the same. How does FireWire on Linux look like? It's split up in 2 parts, as everything, probably. The kernel modules and the user space libraries. Why do I explicitly say this? Because in this case, they're providing also user space libraries that are going to abstract the API from applications. It's a little bit like the difference between what ALSA does using libalsa and what OSS used to do, of I don't know what it is in fact now, but you had to work with devices directly, if I'm not wrong here. Basically, you need 2 parts. The kernel modules for FreeBob are these 3, OHCI 1394, IEEE 1394, and ROM 1394. The first one gives access to the host controller hardware, which is the card you're plugging into the PC, or which is the first thing you see when you enter the computer through the FireWire plug. Let's say it like that. And then there's the IEEE 1394 module, which provides general bus and link management, which so this is decoupled from the hardware support. And then you need RAW 1394, which provides even a higher layer transaction. So it provides an abstraction for transactions and isochronous and other types of things. And then that covers the kernel part. One remark with respect to the kernel part is that in the future this will be replaced by another kernel stack. Normally user space should stay the same, and we are going to try to adapt to this new kernel stack because the performance of it is way better, or should be way better, especially for audio and low latency stuff. The user space libraries in this case are called libraw 1394, so that is to interface with raw 1394, hiding the API. And then two utility libraries that depend on libraw 1394. This slide basically tries to provide you with an idea of what you need to get it all running. I'll come into more detail on that later. Why do I have this slide? Let's just skip it. What's the current status of the... I've warned you that my slides are a work in progress as much as... let's say that the code in FreeBOOK 1.x is of better quality than my slides. So this is already, I think it's half, is it half year or 1.5 years that we released the real 1.0? I think it's half a year, 2006, that's half a year. Okay, so we released it about half a year ago, the FreeBOOK 1.x, which provides low-level device support for the Bebop platform. There's a little bit of difference. What we do is provide support for the platform. And the platform is something like this, which is a development device. And this is sent to a development board. And this is sent out to the people making the stuff like this. And then they take whatever they need and they eliminate whatever they don't need. They rewrite a little bit of software, and then that's sold as a device. We have the luck, the blessing and the curse that we're working with the platform vendors, and that there is a platform. This is a high plus because we can implement the driver for the platform, and then it will probably work with the end user devices. Because the end user device or the vendors do little customization to what the platform vendors sell them. This means that usually they work out of the box. This, for example, works, has virtually no interface customizations. I can just plug it in and it works with the platform driver. Equally true for the Phase 88, it has only one customization, which is to switch on or off the phantom power supply on the XLR inputs. We don't need a lot of support from the hardware vendors, from the end point vendors to implement it, but we do need some. And this is, even this is difficult. So basically, platform support, it's okay because we can offer them something. It's not much work to have your device supported. Can you please help us for a few email conversations, and then usually, hopefully, it works. But in this case, we only have the Bebop platform supported, which is one of the two big competitors. The other one is what I've been showing here. It's DICE. It works for 2 weeks now in the experimental code. And it's, if you combine the Bebop devices and the DICE-based devices, I think you have 80% of all devices available now. So I think the coverage will be pretty good. Up till now, there are not much DICE devices, and most of them are Bebop or totally custom, which we cannot support yet, because vendors don't want to. Like RME doesn't want to help us in any way, so it's not going to happen, I'm sorry. Reverse engineering is not my thing, and I have plenty of work on this. What does it do, our current support? It does audio and MIDI streaming at all sample rates, which is, in my opinion, the most important part. And it's also the most difficult part to implement. We've done it as a Jack backend, because that's the easiest way of doing it. I have written an ELSA plugin, but it doesn't do what it should. So, it's a little bit on hold now, priorities and things like that. And then the Jack backend got ported into a Jack MP backend due to some people requesting this. And this apparently works pretty good. It also supports multiple device setups, which is the case where you, for example, put three or four or two boxes on the same bus and they will act as if they are one. So it combines all of these devices. The multiple device setup is a little bit flaky yet because of some really annoying things. For example, it's difficult to predict which device is going to be recognized as the first device. This is a very stupid problem, but it's not so stupid to solve, which is why it's postponed to 2.0 or 2.x. So the current support, I think my next slide is about future. Okay. Future is FreeBOB 2. It's a ground-up rewrite, especially from a streaming point of view, because in the first generation it was totally written specifically for what the streaming that is used in this in the FreeBOB devices. But what we target for FreeBOB 2 is a framework, is actually a driver framework that is for FireWire audio. So we can do anything that is FireWire and audio. That's the idea. So we had to rewrite quite some parts of the code, and we did it. That's what my talk on Sunday is going to be about. So I'm not going to go into detail here. So we want to support Bebop, Dice, Motu, Metric Hello, and some others if they decide to change their minds, for example, RME. Bebop, Dice, and Motu are supported now in the experimental code. Metric Hello has contacted us if they want to provide their support, but there's not much moving anymore since they did, so I guess they're busy doing something else. But in theory it's possible, and in practice also, hopefully. What does it provide? Basically the same as the first generation and some more. Also some extra device configuration, or the device configuration you would expect, like mixer controls, synchronization choices, all these things. They are not present in the first generation due to the fact that this is the part that needs manufacturer information. Those are the mostly likely the customizations. Streaming is very generic. Okay, it's going to stay a user space library. We have done everything in user space, and I kind of like user space. I have some experience in kernel space, and it's, well, not that nice. It's easier, it has a downside, you need real-time kernels. You need real patched kernels, because otherwise you cannot meet the deadlines. But we have them, so why not do it? The desktop preempted and the real-time preempted kernels are good enough, more than good enough to be reliable. Audio RPEs is the same. Jack MP will be the largest priority, I think. And if you want to use ALSA, maybe we'll someday write, we'll certainly write an ALSA plugin someday, especially if somebody steps up and says, hey, I want to do that. You might have a little present then for everybody that does such things. But you can also use the Jack plug plugin, and that apparently works fine, so it solves the problem, at least in a way. What's done for 2.x? The low-level interfaces are mostly done, so we know how to communicate with the devices. We know how to start the streaming. We know how to configure, or we have implementations that can configure mixers and things like that. The only problem is that we have to expose it to the outside. So the low-level interfacing is present, it works. The streaming is okay, it works for all devices that are in the list. Streaming goes all the way to the user, so Jack will work. But for device control, we currently have a little bit of problem because we want to design the APIs right from the first time, and that's a lot of work. And then, so the things we're now working on is, yeah, low level is almost completely ready. So the external control API, we're designing it. It's not that easy to provide, for example, an API that can represent any mixer you, or any mixer you can find in these devices. Note that we're probably not going to try and provide support for consumer or easy support for consumer devices, but we're more going to the multi-channel device, the pro device, having matrix mixers and well, will probably require some audio knowledge at the first step, some experience with things like a hardware mixer that you know your stuff. But I think it's not a really bad presumption because people buying these devices are not the, how shall I say, like the Doom playing 5.7 surround system people. I don't think you're good when you do that. So that's our point of view is more the semi-pros that know what they're doing. Might be a little bit dangerous to say so, but anyway. And configuration persistence solves the issue of having a device that is, well, if you have multiple devices, you want to know which one is the first. And that's one of the things that's solved by the configuration persistence, also not a very trivial problem in this case. What is to be done? Metric Halo support. Once they provide us with the information and devices, it can be done really fast, but it isn't yet. Actual applications to control this thing. It's nice to have an API that is encompassing everything, but then you still have to use it. So the question is, how are we going to do that? Are we going to come up with one control application that fits all, like ELSA is trying to do? Or are we going to make it easy to write a different control panel for every device that we support? For example, by having different descriptions or whatever. These are all decisions that have to be made. If you have suggestions, I'm open to them. With respect to streaming, we still need the back door, the ports and the plugin. So the JackMP backend ported for 2.x and an ELSA plugin. And we also don't support a SPDIF pass-through yet, which is a matter of just not being done yet. So the conversion is not ready. But it shouldn't be a lot of work, it's just lower priority. And then a port to the new kernel stack is also one of the things we would like to do. So people wanting to run FreeBOB 1.x might be an interesting slide. I will provide them for you. What do you need? You need a real-time patched kernel, desktop or real-time preemption, or complete preemption, or how is it called exactly? Otherwise, you're going to get dropouts. It's just going to happen, trust me. You need some method to gain non-root privileges, non-root real-time privileges, which is maybe the obvious, but from user requests, it is apparently not very obvious. So some kind of way to do that, depending on your distribution. And then you need these libraries with these versions, and you need a check that is at least 0.100.11, which is already fairly old. Is this done?
It's done.
That's great. So that means that now I'm going to try and show you some things. Well, basically it comes down to the fact that it's a very boring demo. It's just going to say that it works. Look, it works. There's one, at the end, hopefully one thing that is slightly interesting. Let's save this for last. In order to be able to take this on the plane, I had to unscrew the front plate. So normally it's less ugly. This is a Teratech Phase 88 FireWire. You did bring the front plate. So it looks like this. And I'm not a marketeer. Unless I don't work for any of these companies. And you might think otherwise now, but I don't. Maybe if there are already some questions from somebody who is burning desire to ask me something.
What is the main difference? Sorry.
Hello. What is the main difference when we are looking at USB or comparing USB to a FireWire? Why is it so much harder?
Well, for example, the main difference in that aspect between FireWire and USB, I have to make sure that I continue because otherwise I won't have, is that USB is host-centric. So it starts with a host and it has some, how is it called in USB language? Well, it has some slave devices or whatever. While FireWire doesn't have a host, it's peer-to-peer. Everybody can be the master or the host. And that makes the protocols way more complex because you, for example, need to elect certain functionalities or certain roles need to be elected and things like that. Also, yeah, well, it's just not simple. I don't know why exactly they made it hard, probably to support a lot of unnecessary things. It's a difficult question to answer, except for the fact that peer-to-peer and these real hot plugging things are, yeah.
Maybe related to that, I think USB, there's a special USB definition. That's how USB devices should do audio, which works for USB 1, and I'm not sure whether that's there for FireWire.
It is, but... unfortunately, this is streamed, so I don't really can express my opinion. No, the FireWire standards, my personal opinion is that they're, for with respect to audio devices, AVC, it's AVC by the 1394 trading organization, and I think they're overly complex. And you can have multiple interpretations of the same standard, which is basically, for me, the definition of a bad standard. But I haven't, I have said that. So I'm sorry for the people at TA that are watching, but I think any standardization organization has issues with that, but I haven't ever seen it this bad. Too honest. There is a class driver, but what happens is, due to the fact that you can have a class driver, and that's what we're trying to aim for. But as you will soon notice, a class driver will require, for example, a discovery of about 1 minute of a device or 30 seconds of a device. So it takes 30 seconds before you can start your class driver, due to the complexity. And the class driver itself, due to the fact that the standards are multi, or can be have multiple interpretations, it's basically defined by Apple. So you might laugh about it, but that's what happens. All manufacturers make sure that their device works with the driver of Apple. And if it works with the driver of Apple, it's class compliant. Apple has one, macOS X has a FireWire device driver, and you plug your device in and it will work. And it's one device, you don't have to install anything. So that's basically a class driver, but the problem is that the subset of standards used to get to that class, it is not very obvious how to do the interpretation. And we're aiming for that, but it's if you're interested, join us. It's this pile of documentation that you have to work through just to understand what is going on. And then you have to restart because you've lost track somewhere in between. It's really not something you want to do. But unfortunately, we have to. I have to give credit. I'm responsible for the streaming part, and the streaming part is well defined. You cannot interpret it differently in the standard, so that's easy. And that's why the DICE works so fast. It uses the same streaming protocol, but not the same discovery. So discovery is the standards that are a little bit complex, and streaming are well standardized, so you can... I just basically took the streaming code for the BBOPs, and I used it for the DICE, and it worked immediately. So that's what standards should result in. But I'm really sure that if we put on the firmware containing AVC discovery on the DICE device, it won't work with the BBOP code. I'm 100% sure of that. And that's a shame. So now we're using the information from the DICE people themselves. So they have their own discovery algorithm and things like that, which is way simpler than the AVC stuff. And that's what use for this DICE device. And that's good because the devices on the market now, based on that chip, have the proprietary firmware. So not the AVC compliant glass firmware, which will happen eventually, but hopefully not too fast. But now I still haven't done anything. So, first thing I'm going to try to show, giving Murphy some chances here. So, if you're lucky, it works. I should be a little bit more confident. The picture. I think I'll just have to. We can get a distorted image out later. So maybe people will believe me if I say that it's true. Let's just try. Okay, it somehow reflects to what you're used to, hopefully. If you start developing on such screens, you will probably go mad really soon. I had my power supply here. Off we go. Okay, so this is a Phase 88. It's a BBOP platform, 10 in, 10 out, of which two IOs are digital. Oh, I'm very lucky because this here says segmentation faults. The demo I'm going to provide is FreeBOP 2. 1.0 is just working fine, and maybe some people here already run it. And, the 2 is still very experimental, but contains the support for nice things. And it's just to convince you that it works. And very important. I just typed in the start command, and I'll show you when it starts streaming. So it's still discovering. It's still figuring out what's happening. This is AVC. Still, okay, off we go. And if you change your sample rate, it starts all over again. So, it's now running. Let's see. Hydrogen. Always interesting client. And what else than QJAC control? Oh, I have to try. Do we have a check connection here? Just, is this connected to the speakers? Okay. Let's just try. I had a plug like that. It might sound a little bit weird because these are balanced. There's nothing entering here, so. Do you have audio somewhere going out? So there's something wrong. Let's first try another device. Sometimes happens with the Phase 88 is that if you transport it, something, the two device plates here get loose, and then it's just the audio connection doesn't get routed to the interfacing board. So I'm going to check that later on. But first, I want something running. Discovery starts again. This one is less channel, so less discovery. It will be a little bit faster. Yeah, off you go. Oh, it changed sample rate, so it starts again. And now it won't work. Of course, it won't work. This is due to a small bug. apparently it's not me. Man, all of a sudden I don't feel as warm anymore. I don't know. Okay. Oh, crap, your organization. It's just a joke. What is the relief? Oh, that better leave it. So now, I plugged in the non-green one. Yeah, the non-green one is plugged in. I don't know, there's no red on this. Yeah. Now we get something. Ah, okay. Part one, this works. Okay, now, as I have this device connected, I'm going to show you something else.
Yeah.
Which is a feature of the new version that I find a little bit interesting, to say at least. I need some other cabling for that. With the help of my lovely assistant here, Mr. Sampo. So, how do you say your
my name?
Your name on the
Sampo Savolainen.
Okay. One of these names. I read them, I understand them, but I cannot pronounce them. So what we're going to do now is have. There's a mode built into the, a design which was a very straightforward due to the design of FireWire, and that is having, okay, the crash. There's something. What is happening here? What was I saying? So due to the fact that all communication between devices that is isochronous, meaning the protocol that's used for communication between of audio data, that's a broadcast communication, meaning that everybody can read it. So what we've implemented is, well, we've put two and two together, meaning that we have one computer talking to the device as if as normal, and then you have another computer discovering the capabilities of the device and then listening on every all traffic. The idea is to have, for example, if people want to have a backup recording of some session or whatever, or want to have two computers recording it because it should not go wrong in live situations or something like that. If one crashes, the other can continue. That's a basic idea. We're not completely there yet, but we can show that it does work. The problem up till now is that if the main machine goes down, there's no takeover mechanism for the second machine to take over the connection and act as if it's a master. So what this can do is avoid underrun issues, or at least make them fixable. The takeover mechanism will probably be implemented soon. Okay, we go for discovery again. And then it starts. Okay, now wait a second. I'm going to plug into yours first. Let's get something here. So front left. Now let's switch over the screen to samples. Lovely dot. Is it?
You break the loop. Break the loop.
No. Oh yeah. Now I did. Thank you. Okay, so let's restart this. This kind of demos is probably that they're horribly boring, and I'm not really the person to start telling some interesting stories about my neighbor's cat or something like that. You can try to, which I'm doing now. Okay, we're live. Normally, what should happen now is that if he starts his instance of Jack, it will represent everything that's on the bus as input ports to Jack. First it's going to start discovering the device again, so figuring out what's the channel configuration and things like that, so that you don't have to specify it, it just happens. And then it starts, okay, off we go. And now the idea is that we start an order session that to show you that it's actually coming in. So what you see is one channel having the audio, and now I'm going to introduce the right channel, and then the other one starts. So what basically happens is that if you would press record on this order workstation, it records everything that's present in both directions. So both from the PC to the device, as what is coming from the device to the PC or to the master machine. Something else that I would have liked to show, but it's just not stable enough, is having two is basically NetCheck, but then over FireWire, which has some advantages with synchronization and things like that. The idea is that you can, for example, have a JackRack instance running on one machine and having your Ardour running on the other, or have a Linux sampler running on the one machine as a dedicated sampling, and you can just introduce it in your FireWire network, where you have other devices, for example, I/O devices like the Phase 88, appearing in QJack control as...
Oh, you can lift the audio.
No, it's not running anymore in your case, I guess. So, the FireWire devices interfaces appear in QJack control, and the computer or the second slave device will just appear as if it's as if it's an interface. So that's the mode that we're working on, and I've got it running, but not to the extent that I'm confident enough that it will start up in this case. So there are still some serious issues to work out. One thing that also makes us stand out from the other operating system vendors is the fact that you have DICE devices, and I can show you that they work. But I will show you that we have DICE devices that work together with Bebop devices, which are competing products. I can also say that if you have two different vendor but same platform devices, for example something from Focusrite and Teratec Phase 88, that they will work together. There's one provision which I will give later on. But the key point is that what we're doing is so generic that you can have two totally incompatible devices working together, acting as if they are one. And it's something that is not possible on other operating systems. Maybe on macOS, if you use the platform class driver, it should be possible, because then there is no difference between the devices. But I don't know, I don't have it, and I haven't tested that yet. So what I'm now going to try to do is generate a setup which has 36 IOs, I think. So that's a nice device. There's one little not really a problem, but a little issue is that you still need to provide external synchronization. So you need word clock synchronization in order for this to work. The FireWire specification gives an opportunity to avoid this, so to have the complete device synchronization also over the FireWire bus. But I haven't seen it working yet. So there's also on Windows or on macOS it's not working. So I don't know to what extent that will ever work. So word clock might be the good option. I'm going to restrict myself to showing that it starts and that it runs. Because otherwise, I will be connecting cables for a while in order to create something that actually makes use of such a device.
Zero.
Let's see what happens now. This is the discovery of the phase 88. I think the discovery of the dice is already done. It's already finished, or it's a blink of an eye. So that's the advantage of. Right. Are we running? No, we're not. Let me first check. Okay, I see. It's not synchronized. Okay, I'm going to finish my talk. Or do I stop now? Okay, give me 2 minutes. What's input here? It should work. Okay, now it will work. So maybe I'll try and sum up what I'm trying to say here, and that is, first generation FreeBOB will work fine. I think there are testimonials in the room here of people that are using it and it will work fine. There are some issues, but what doesn't have them? Okay, off we go. Lots of problems. And we're gone. Problem that you just saw was the fact that the two devices have to get synchronized towards each other, and that generates some underruns, and due to the fact that what you see here is a synchronization issue. Let's just say that this didn't happen before.
I saw it working.
So the second generation FreeBOB is a little bit experimental still, but the major part of the work is done. So, of the core work, we still need some high-level stuff, like the mixer controls and stuff, and we would like some help with that. Okay, nope, this is not going to work, I'm sorry. Don't have time to solve it. And despite the small issues here, I hope I've convinced you that we're getting somewhere. Remember, the first version is already out, which is a good thing. This is development is top-notch, is stuff that isn't been done anywhere else yet.
We have one question, time for one question, and we have one from the IRC chat.
Yes, Paul Davis from Philadelphia, US, wanted to know how distributing audio like this compares with NetJack. How distributing audio in this way compares with doing it with NetJack.
I personally haven't used NetJack yet. The main difference would be that you don't need a lot of synchronization because it's built into the protocols. The FireWire provides you with a slot, a dedicated bandwidth slot every 125 microseconds, and you're guaranteed, if you reserve the bandwidth, you're guaranteed the bandwidth. And I think that's the major difference between NetJack and this. Is it not working? Everybody understands? So the major difference between NetJack and this would be that you're guaranteed your bandwidth, and that might be in practice, or in reality it might not be that much of a problem if you have a dedicated gigabit network, but I don't know what the issues are with NetJack. I don't know it enough in order to give a really valid response to that question. If that, I hope Paul is happy now. I would have, could have expected something from him.
I guess Paul will tell us in a few tomorrow. Days. He's arriving tomorrow afternoon. Well, thanks again very much. There's a second talk which goes more into the technical details,
yeah.
Even more on
this was
Sunday.
Not technical at all. Not to this
On Sunday, Peter will be around in the conference all the time. Hopefully, yeah, he'll probably be able to answer any more questions directly. We will continue after a very short break to set the next talk up. So don't go away too far. If you want to see the next talk, we'll start in a moment. The next talk is Integrating Documentation and User Support and Developer Resources using Linux Audio.org.